My name is Tony Ann. I'm a compulsive overeater. And
hi,
everybody. And I'm just so grateful for this opportunity to learn more about this amazing fellowship. So I'm happy today to share with you what I've learned. Let me first tell you that I've been in these rooms since October 2000. Not sure what my current weight, I'd have to figure it out. But I've been maintaining a healthy weight. I can't tell you that I was abstinent the entire time that I've been in here. But my most recent abstinence is from September 2014. And I did come back in and work these steps the AA way through the big book. So Roseanne, let me just tell you, let me start off by reading you something in chapter 2. There is a solution. This is from the AA big book. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are representative, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is inexplicably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. That feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. But that in itself would have never held us together as we are now joined. So I come here today to speak to you about the solution. A woman was born in 1930. Her name was Roseanne. She was born to a very progressive parents at that time. Her parents were very educated. Her father was very active in a Jewish community, and he set up like groups in his community all across the country. So he was very good at promoting things and setting up things. And that's how she was raised. And her mom was, at that time, her mom had graduated from college, from university. So her mom was university educated. And back at that time, I guess that would have been before the 30s and the 20s, that wasn't really a common thing for women to have gone to university. And so her parents really believed that you know, the way for success in life was to excel. And so she was taught early on that she needed to excel, and that in order to have self-worth, that she needed to do something that was as important as her parents. And she fought that battle within herself. She was a very petite woman. She was 5'2", and then later on, I heard her mention that she went to the doctor. She was measured at 4'11". But she struggled with her weight. And when she went into college, she would go up and down. She said that what she used to motivate her most to lose weight was dating. I don't know if that anybody could relate. You could relate with that, but yeah, she would look to date or find a man, and she would lose weight down to that weight. And then once she got to that weight, unfortunately, what happened is like many of us, or at least my story, I couldn't stay there. She couldn't stay to that weight. But she had dieted herself at the time down to 114 pounds, and she met her husband, Marvin. She goes on and has two children. And it's funny because that's part of my story. After I had my two kids, I stayed home, and that's when my eating disorder really took off. And the same thing was happening for her. So one night, she was settling down to her usual routine. I don't know if anybody in the audience can relate to this, but everybody, the kids were down, her husband went to bed, everything was quiet. So she decides that she's going to do, her routine was that she was going to put on the TV and relax and eat. So she settles down to her food and her TV, and she puts on a show called Paul Coates. I think it's called, let me just get it exactly. Oh, confidential. I always forget that word, confidential. Paul Coates' Confidential File. And she's watching the show, and it's kind of like a talk show of its time. So she's watching the show, and they have on these people from Gamblers Anonymous. And she's very interested in it because, not because of herself, but because her husband's friend had a problem with gambling. So she watched the show, and the next day she tells her husband, and she goes, Marvin, we have to go. We have to go to this group and bring your friend. So, I don't know if anybody else can relate to this, but she wasn't worried about her own problems, but she was trying to fix everybody else. So she goes, and that's exactly how the birth of this fellowship happened. Isn't that funny? So she goes to a GA in 1959. It's the end of the year. She takes this man to GA with her husband, and she sits in the back of the room. At the time, the wives were allowed to go to the meetings. So it wasn't uncommon that women were there. So she was sitting with the wives. And as she's sitting there, she's listening to them talk, and she starts identifying in with being an addict. And all of a sudden, it hits her, and she thought to herself, oh my God, I do the same thing that these people do with gambling, except I do it with food. And she was, it was at that time that she was able to identify herself as a compulsive overeater. So she goes home because she's got self-knowledge now. I know you learned about that last week, right? She has self-knowledge now, and she goes home on a diet. And, you know, for about a few months, the goose held high, right? The goose flew high, that says in a big book. And so she was able to lose weight. But of course, just like everything else that, you know, we had tried, the self-knowledge really didn't last her much. It availed her nothing. So she, after a year of struggling, knowing that she was now a compulsive overeater and trying to do this on her own, just knowing what her problem was, she was unsuccessful. She thinks to herself, well, I have to go back to that group and make sure that this is really the right thing. So in 1960, it was the beginning, I guess, of 1960, she goes back to the group and she gets this idea. Now remember, she comes from a very progressive family, okay? So this little 5'2" woman decides that she's going to start her own group based on GA, and it's going to be about food. So she walks up to the founder of GA, Jim W., and she introduces herself and she tells him that I'm a compulsive overeater and there's nothing out there for me. I'd like to start a group like you did for eaters, for food, and it's going to be compulsive overeaters. Will you help me? And so Jim W., actually, who was the founder of GA, became the very first sponsor of OA. And he was very kind and gentle with Roseanne. He let her find her way for a while until he was ready to really push her in a certain direction. But she comes home after having gone to the second meeting. She buys the bunch of literature. I don't know if anybody can relate to this. She gets a bunch of the literature, right? And then she goes home. And she decides that she's going to write her own 12 steps. I have them here. So if anybody, I can pass them around, if anybody's interested, pretty funny. On this page, I also wrote, put the original tools as they were used. So she writes, she didn't understand, of course, now she, no spiritual awakening, no understanding, nothing like that. And she was really like more of an atheist. You know, she was brought up in a religion, but she really didn't follow that religion. And she didn't care for that God stuff. So she decided to just take all of that out because she didn't feel that that was important. So she took out the God stuff and she inserted things like you have to go to the doctor and count calories. So she that was in 1960. And so she realizes now that she's going to these GA meetings, and she realizes that she can't do this by herself. So she's desperate to find somebody else that she can be used as her fellowship. She wants to start this big fellowship. Right from the beginning, she has an idea that OA is going to be bigger than AA. She figures OA is going to be bigger than AA. So she goes around looking around. And this woman moves into her development who's morbidly obese. Well, she couldn't have been happier when she saw her. She thought to myself, she thinks to herself, you know, ooh, potential customer. So she finds a very discreet way to tell this woman, whose name was Joe, that she kind of beats around the bush a little bit and finally talks her into going to this group with her that she was going to start. And in her meeting, in her living room, in it's December 1959 that she talks to Joe, and in January 19th, 1960, they have the first OA meeting in her living room. There was three people at that meeting. It was herself, her neighbor Joe, and a woman whose name was Bernice, who was one of the wives of somebody from the GA meeting that she was able to get to come to the meeting. And so the three of them are there. At this time, Roseanne was losing weight with the help of her doctor. She was counting calories and taking diet pills under the supervision of her doctor. Which sounds funny, but back at that time, remember, you know, in the 60s, it was very common for people to be on diet pills. That when you went to the doctor, that's what they did. So she was on her diet pills, and she was doing very well. So 6 months of having meetings, she decides now that she's ready to take OA national, and she's going to go on TV after 6 months. Okay? Of course, she lost weight in 6 months taking the diet pill, so she figures she's arrived and she's ready to go. So she calls up that same program that she saw the GA stuff on. It was called the Paul Coates program. Without, of course, there's no group conscious. You know. Imagine a newcomer comes in here in 6 months and decides to go on TV, but she does. She was inspired, and of course, Paul Coates says, "Sorry, you know, we already have our quota of people with diets this year. We'll call us back some other time." So in the meantime, she rewrites those steps, and the first pieces of literature that's ever handed out at this meeting was the rewritten steps that she had wrote, along with another pamphlet that had the Serenity Prayer on it, and she was taking that from the GA meetings. Hold on a second. So she gets a call one night. She's already in bed, and the phone rings, and it's the producer from the Paul Coates show. And they said to her that there was an emergency. They had to do some fill-in, program time, and they have a spot available next week. Can her and all of the members of Overeaters Anonymous please go on the TV show and tell their story? So at this time, there was a whole grand total of 7 people in the program. Out of the 7, only 2 of them had lost weight. Right? So they in the meantime, she runs and she goes and she gets like a post office box at the local post office, thinking that she might get some responses and stuff. She opens up the box. So they end up going on TV, and they wanted the camera to span over all 7 of these people. And her and Joe are the only ones that actually, do the qualifications and speak. And she tells about, based on GA and based on AA, and they lost weight, and it's a fellowship of people that are working together, and they tell their story. And it ends up that the program is syndicated in 4 states. So they run it in California, Arizona, Minnesota, and Florida. So out of that, on November 29th, she starts to get these letters come in. She goes to the post office one day, and she finds there was a letter with a yellow paper wrapped around it. She opens up the box, and they say she thought that was all of the letter, and the letter said, "Please see the postmaster." She goes in the back, and there was bags and bags of mail from responses from people who were suffering from compulsive overeating that wanted help. So she goes ahead and she makes this letter like a survey. She sends them out the literature. Of course, the literature she sends them is the rewritten steps, the Serenity Prayer, and she sends them out then a survey. And the survey says on it, if you're interested in starting a group in your area, please send us your name and number, and information. We'll send you information. If you're interested in joining a group in your area, please send us your information and we'll hook you up with a group that we have in your area. So right around the time that's happening, they have their first meeting of the people that were in that group to vote about some different issues that they had. That took place on June 14th, 1961. Hang on 1 second. In that meeting, nope, not yet. In July 29th, 1961, there were 15 OA groups. And they decided that they needed to print up a directory. So the first OA directory had 15 OA groups on it. Now, moving along, things are happening. They're very, very busy. And they're spending a lot of time not necessarily focusing on recovery, but what they're focusing on is answering these questions, these letters, and getting people hooked up. So they're developing fellowship. And that's basically how we started out. In 1961, they made a list of working tools. If you look at the handout for a second on the bottom after where it says the 12 steps, you'll see that there is the list of tools. And so it's interesting because as I was reading those tools, and maybe for the recording, if I can grab one of my own. Can I take somebody's?
Yeah.
Nice. I'll just read them in for the recording. The first one is to attend the meetings each week religiously. The second tool was phoning, telephone calls. The third tool was stripping the home of foods that help nourish a binge. The fourth tool, having a calorie chart, count calories and measure. Number 5, plan, think and prepare your meals and have 3 meals a day. Number 6 is abstinence. This is the first introduction to abstinence. It later becomes defined and then, of course, redefined. Abstinence, do not eat between meals. Number 7, make small goals. Number 8, one day at a time. Postpone 1 hour at a time. And number 9, read program at home. Educate yourself about literature, about nutrition. And it's interesting because I was thinking about this. A lot of when I work with newcomers, a lot of the things that I say to newcomers without even having read those original tools are basically those tools that we still use today. And I think to myself about learning how to, detox that first time when I'm putting down that food and getting through that initial push when I'm having withdrawal. Those tools really do come in handy. So that's October 10th, 1961. So Roseanne continues to attend AA meetings. from 1960 to 1969 regularly, right? Her first AA-style sponsor was Thelma, this woman named Thelma, and she finally works the steps for the first time in 1961. After having a spiritual awakening, a bunch of people in the fellowship basically tell her off. They tell her that you think you know it all, and they really rip into her. She goes home one night, and she's like laying on the floor, crying hysterical. And it's at that moment that she realizes that she needs a higher power, that she can't do this alone. And so it was her first like ego-deflating moment, really. And she has that spiritual experience laying there on the floor. And all of a sudden, she gets the willingness to actually work this program. And so she does. So after having a spiritual awakening, working the steps, she decides that she's going to rewrite the steps at that time to mimic the steps as they're actually written in AA. And after hearing a speaker in 1961 in AA, she gets this idea. The speaker was talking about abstaining from alcohol. And she realizes that members at that time, they were counting calories, but they might have been like eating stuff throughout the course of the day, as long as they were counting their calories, but they were still grazing all day. And she gets an idea that she thinks that members that were not abstaining from food, they were nibbling between their meals, they were feeding their food obsession. So she says the word abstain, she was explaining, comes from the Greek word, which means to stay away from. And then that's where she gets the idea to abstain and only eat three meals a day with nothing in between. And that's where that idea of that abstinence being three meals a day with nothing in between comes from. While I'm talking about that subject, let me talk about the other idea, which is we abstain from flour and sugar. So does anybody know where that comes from? Okay, so a woman named Irene, who was also very influential in the early days of OA, she had, after 25 years of AA, they published a publication which was called AA Today. In the publication, they had a bunch of stories that were from members and non-members, and they explained about how AA had helped them. There was one member, he was a priest. His name was Father Edward Dowling, and he titled his story, AA Steps for the Underprivileged and Non-OA. And I'm going to, in his story, he writes, and I'm going to quote, "My 240-pound gluttony gave me two heart attacks. An alcoholic doctor got me down towards 180 pounds when he advised a total abstinence from sugar, butter, salt, and starch. He said these four foods were probably my alcohol. Abstinence was much easier with temperance." So when Irene reads this, she gets this idea that we should be abstaining from, well, she didn't have a problem. See, Irene didn't have a problem with butter, unlike me, and she didn't have a problem with salt. So she didn't think that that was a big thing, but she realized that she did have a problem with sugar and starch. So she thought that we should abstain from sugar and starch. Hence comes into OA the abstinence from flour and sugar. So now this caused a huge problem in OA at the time. And there was a group that was called the Valley Group, and they were they eventually became known as the carbohydrate abstainers. And they didn't like the idea that the LA group was eating carbohydrates. You know, they thought that everybody should abstain. And Irene actually goes on to make her own diet plan, and she prints it up on this gold piece of paper and has it copyrighted. Okay. So talk about where egos, right? She has this plan copyrighted, and it becomes what's known as the gold sheet. So this is going to cause a very big problem eventually in OA, as you can imagine. And the debate with food plans goes on for quite some time, and I'll get to that in a little bit later. February 1st, 1962 is a very significant day in OA. It was the first OA conference in California. There was 9 women there representing 6 groups. Many of the early members were atheists and agnostics and skeptics, and there was a strong sentiment against changing the steps to reflect AA's 12 steps. They wanted to keep the OA steps as they were. They did not want to have the AA steps as we have them today. There was a very big rift that formed in OA, which was later known to be referred to as the spiritual psychological fight in OA, which almost broke OA apart, but later on it does work out. I'm trying to find a date. There's an important... June 14th, 1961, another significant date in OA history. That is the date that they all got together, the original Tuesday group with Roseanne, and they decided that there should be no men in OA. They thought, a bunch of women thought to themselves, well, you know, we talk about these personal issues and we talk about our husbands and sex and we really don't want to have men come in. And so they voted to have no men in OA. That was in June 1961. This is going to change very quickly. Thank God. So what happens is, in 1962, a bunch of very significant things happen. And I'm kind of moving around here. The first national conference is held. There's five groups from... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm skipping ahead. The first OA conference is held with nine women. And that's where I told you they voted in... Thank you. They voted in that we were going to go ahead and use the AA steps. In 1962, Roseanne writes the first newsletter. At that time, it was called The Bulletin. In that bulletin, she decides that she's going to provide a clear definition of the word abstinence. The definition she writes is, abstinence means simply three moderate meals a day with absolutely nothing in between. And I don't know about you, but when I came in 2000, that was my very first introduction to OA program. I was talking to somebody about my diet, and she told me that she ate three weighed and measured meals with nothing in between. And I know many people, perhaps like me, have heard that said to them. Three weighed and measured meals with nothing in between. So she writes the bulletin. The bulletin later on becomes known as, we all know, the Lifeline. She gets this idea for the name of the Lifeline by a vision of a ship throwing out the preservers to drowning people and then pulling them back on with what's called the Lifeline. Hence the OA bulletin, and the Lifeline is born. Okay, so in 1962, she decides that she's going to write her own literature. So she studies the big book, she takes a bunch of quotes, and she writes everything down, all the significant pieces that she wants, and she submits it to AA for permission. She goes on vacation, she comes back, she gets a letter from AA, and they say, sorry, we don't want you to use our information in your publication because we feel it is a violation of our copyright. Okay? Hence... that's really where the split became between the AA literature and the OA literature. They had to come up with, Roseanne had to come up with OA literature that did not have the quotes and stuff from the big book. So that's why you'll find, for example, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous does not have a lot of content in it from the big book, all right, for us. Up until that time that this was written, and I do have this all written down, the 12 and 12 was written... sorry, I'm going a little bit all over the place here. The 12 and 12 was written for the first time in 1990. Up until 1990, when you came into OA, you would have been given the AA Big Book and the AA 12 and 12, and that's the information that they were working out of. They didn't have any of this book. So that's the reason why we don't see that. Although I will tell you that the new edition of the 12 and 12, I don't know if you have it for sale here, but they have much more reference in the big book, to the big book in the new edition. They were finally able to get permission after how many years AA finally gives us AA finally gives us permission to print some of their stuff in our OA literature. So it's really exciting news that's going on for today. So, she comes home and she gets the reject from AA, she's really deflated, but she gets another letter in the mail. And this letter is from a man called A.G. A.G. And he heard about Roseanne, I don't know, from watching a show or something, but he was out in Texas. And it's funny because he was the founder of a group called, you ready for this? Gluttons Anonymous. And he decided he was doing the same thing in Texas. He formed a group, Gluttons Anonymous, that was based on AA and was doing the same exact thing as Roseanne. Now, right before all of this happened, and Roseanne was trying to get this publication printed quickly because they were going to have their very first big national conference. So when she gets the letter from AG, she gets very excited and she ends up talking to him on the phone. In her excitement on the phone, guess what she does? She invites him to the conference, forgetting all about the idea that they forgot that men were not supposed to be allowed. So Roseanne, we could thank Roseanne for unilaterally making the decision to let men come in. The first man in OA was A.G. from Texas, who goes on to become, not only were you allowed in, but he goes on to be the first elected president on the Board of Trustees. He was a Texas oil man who was very successful in business. She got so excited because he was going to fly in on his private plane. So, of course, yes, yes, we want you to come. And he, because he was really a businessman, it was his idea to set up OA as a 501(c), as a nonprofit. And it was also his idea to set up a board of trustees. And they also developed at that first conference a set of bylaws. One of the bylaws said that if the members of the trustees were not at their goal weight, that they would have to step down from their position. So that they instilled an abstinence requirement for service. That came from the very first conference that they had with those bylaws. Okay, moving along here. After the taping of the show, we talked about that. She writes an open letter. I'm sorry, I'm just going through these notes. Moving along here. 19, talked about that. Tools. So she goes to that. Sorry, a lot of notes here. Yeah. I have 5 more minutes? Oh, that went fast. Good thing I'm going through this, huh? All right. So we talked about abstinence. In May 1963, another significant thing happens in OA. The wording for the third tradition is carefully debated at their World Service meeting, and they decided, now remember, the third tradition states that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. They also considered saying to stop overeating. Now, this is significant in the history of OA, because if they had put that in when they said stopped overeating, it would have precluded a large sector of people that were able to help. By putting in the words that said stop eating compulsively, we opened the door in OA to people who had bulimia and people who were anorexic. So think of all the thousands of people that have been helped with those diseases. Let me just talk really quickly. In 1965, OA is endorsed by Dear Abby. Most of you probably know that. A letter is written the day I was born, February 25th, 1969, a letter is written to Dear Abby by a member in OA. The letter results in 7,000 responses to the OA office. 7,000. And really helped to spearhead the birth of the expansion of OA. In 1965, there's a group that forms in a place called Westminster, California. They were a very strict group. This group later forms the basis of a program that we now know as HOW. HOW. And I did bring with me, if anybody's interested, there was a... what happened is a bunch of speakers from that group in California came to New York, and they went to, I think it was Long Island, and they spoke at a meeting, and from there they decided that they were going to print up these writings. And they have what's called, many of you know the old timers, the Westminster Writings. That's where that comes from. And it was from that group in the Westminster Writings eventually that we got HOW in New York and New Jersey. I have a listing of the writings. If you're interested, you can go ahead and look at them. The food plan, my last few minutes, was a great debate from 1960 to 1970. They had the gold sheet later on becomes the green sheet. And then turns to the gray sheet. And then, as we all know, right, we know the gray sheet. And then in 1977, OA publishes suggested abstinence guides for losing weight. And in 1979, that becomes what we know as dignity of choice. Dignity of choice. And that included 8 different food plans. From 1979 to 1987, they used that, where they decided later on that it was a violation of Tradition 10. Tradition 10 says that OA as such ought never be organized. So they did not feel that having an organized food plan was going to be okay for the fellowship. So today, as we know, OA endorses no specific food plan. Most newcomers are probably surprised when they come into their first meeting, where's the diet and nothing is given. So that we know we work out with our sponsors. In 1980, the OA Anonymous Personal Story book is written, the first edition. Since then, we've had a second edition in 2001, and the newest edition is 2014. It was in 1985 that HOW started. It begins in Arizona as an offshoot of that Westminster group. In 1990, the 12 Steps and, actually this one, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous is published. In 1993, many of you are familiar with this book. The first OA workbook is published. A recent workbook, Working the Steps in 15 Weeks, is now available. That's an upgrade to this book. Many of us are familiar with Roseanne's plan, a prayer. I put my hand in yours. That prayer came out of a publication in 1968 that she sent out to help people set up meetings. She sent out a publication. The first meetings they suggested, first of all, was to have discipline in meetings. And in order to promote discipline, she suggested that you set the chairs up like an audience and have people like we're doing today, people sitting at the front, so that that discouraged crosstalk and chatter and really put the focus on the people speaking. Also, you had, if you wanted to speak, you had to get up in front of the room and speak. So it was a little bit, you know, more intimidating for people. And that was, she sent that out. And that's where that prayer comes, I put my hand in yours. I think Roseanne passes away. She dies on January 16th, 2014. And I have to say, like on a personal note, you know, I really gained great respect for her and the work that she put into this program. We all wouldn't be sitting here today if it wasn't for her vision and for her dream. She may not have known exactly what she was doing in the beginning, but it didn't matter. A higher power knew what it was doing and took over, you know. And I found for myself that, you know, sometimes I've embarked on things myself. Maybe some of you can relate to this. And I didn't exactly know what I was doing either. But there was some power, some force that was bigger than me, that had a plan, just like each of us have a plan. And that plan works in our lives, whether we know what we're doing or not. As long as we go with the flow and we have that honesty, openness, and willingness. And you too can have the recovery that you can find in this program, Overeaters Anonymous. And it's changed my life and it's saved my life. And I want to say that if I can do it, anybody in this room can do it. And we're not alone anymore. And together we can do what we could never do. And I'll leave you with that. Anyway, thank you.